Gang, we all know Spotify is the best and most popular music streaming app. They have millions of songs by millions of artists available at your fingertips. But did you know that aside from millions of songs by millions of artists, Spotify also has thousands of podcasts from all of your favorites, including Fresh Air, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and of course, How Did I Get Here? That's right, we are on Spotify. Just go to Spotify.com or download the app from your app store, and don't forget to follow How Did I Get Here? That's Spotify. Millions of songs, now thousands of podcasts. Do it up. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope that you're all healthy and sane out there, wherever it is that you are. I hope that you had a good weekend, whatever that means in the spring of 2020. Could mean anything, really. I'm not even sure what it means to me. Although I did have what I would consider a good weekend, right? So I got that going for me. Anyway, great weekend. I want to touch base on the last show that came out, episode 915. With Jimmy Dale Gilmore. I got some emails about that. People liked it. Thank you so much. I'm a big fan of Jimmy Dale Gilmore. We had some new people coming to the show. I know, it's weird. We've been around for a long time. I'm sure we probably have some new people coming to the show today. I have a great show for you guys today. Let me start off with just a quick story. In 1990, I lived in Houston, and I was in a band called Panjandrum that was being courted by a publishing company from Los Angeles called Emerald Forest. There was a lady there named Kathy Waldman who was into our band. She was the A&R person that wanted to sign us. And she would send me music all the time from different connections she had at labels and stuff. And I guess, and if my memory serves right, Emerald Forest, their offices were by a record label called Charisma. So in the summer of 1990, my friend Kathy sent me a care package with all kinds of music, songwriters she might want my band to get together and write with, and some music from a new band called Jellyfish. Their album was going to be coming out, I guess, in a month or two or something, and she sent a disc and a cassette. And man, when I played that album, it was Jellyfish Belly Button, it blew my mind. I was like, man, this is the band I've been waiting for. I'm a huge pop guy, like a power pop guy, guitar pop guy. Yeah, Beatle pop, whatever that pop is. I love a Britney Spears, but my genre of music, like the kind that I write, the kind that I record and make, is considered power pop. Lots of ooh la la la's and backing vocals and melodic songs that are based in something, a tradition of music that started in like the 60s. You know what I mean? Power pop. I was blown away. I love Jellyfish. Fell in love with them, got to see them on their Spilt Milk tour, and that brings me to today's show. There's a new band featuring the guys that were in the band at that time during the Spilt Milk era. Roger Joseph Manning Jr., Eric Dover, and Tim Smith have all started a new band called The Licorice Quartet. They have a brand new EP called Threesome Volume 1. It drops this Friday, May 15th. They have a single out right now called Lighthouse Spaceship. Fucking epic. Epic song. Unbelievable. Great, great song. And it's epic. Like, it goes a lot of places, does all the changes, does all these things. It's a very adventurous first single to put out, but also quite a statement to make from this band, because it's like, hey, man, it's not like Jellyfish where there's like a main singer or anything like this. All of these guys share writing duty and singing duty and, I guess, fronting duty. Roger Joseph Manning Jr. was in Jellyfish. He plays in Beck's band. He had a band after Jellyfish with Eric Dover called Imperial Drag. And then Eric Dover was also the singer of Slash's Snake Pit. Tim Smith, who was in Jellyfish, is also played with Sheryl Crow for a long time. And he plays with Liam Gallagher and his High Flying Birds. And so all of these guys are pretty busy all the time doing stuff. And they're session dudes, and they play on people's records, but they got together, and they decided to try and do this new band together, like almost in a Crosby, Stills, Nash way. Like, every guy writes songs, they have a beautiful harmony, like, blend together, it's gorgeous. They're writing great songs, so this EP, Threesome Volume 1, drops May 15th, but you can hear the single Lighthouse Spaceship. It's available now, the epic song that I was talking about. If you want to check that out before my conversation with the immensely talented Roger Joseph Manning Jr., you should probably do that. So, I was very excited to get to talk to Roger. I've been a huge fan, as I said, of Jellyfish and all the stuff that he does. His work on the Beck records is always amazing. Sometimes I'll look on the credits of a record if I really like something, and it turns out it was him. So that was very exciting. And it also turns out that in the 90s, he and I were somehow set up and had these phone conversations where we talked about doing some music together, but it ended up not happening. Now, before I did this podcast, I was a little bit nervous. I didn't really know, like, if I should bring that up. So I didn't, but he remembered and he brought it up. And so that was very flattering and very nice. I'm a huge fan of this band. I'm a huge fan of each of these guys individually. I'm a huge fan of where they came from to me, which is Jellyfish. So hearing new music from members of that band, hearing that familiar sort of songs that you want to start singing along with, I think that's what power pop is. Hearing that from these guys was incredibly gratifying. And if you're a fan of Jellyfish, if you're a fan of Imperial Drag, if you're a fan of any of that stuff, you're going to love the Licorice Quartet. And now their EP, once again, Threesome Volume 1, drops this Friday, May 15th. But you can hear the first single, Lighthouse Spaceship, wherever it is you stream and download your jams. You can go to thelicoricequartet.com for all of your Licorice Quartet needs. And now, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the amazingly talented and extremely cool Roger Joseph Manning Jr. from the Licorice Quartet. Let's get down.
Right. Yes, thank you so much for making this happen.
Oh, good. Yeah, man. Thanks for doing it. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, just like everybody. Yeah. But really no complaints. A lot of exciting things in my life, and I'm very grateful. So I just am hopeful that this moves in and out of our lives collectively as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think we all do, man. It's been a definitely the weirdest time of all. And also it must have been odd, like getting together and doing this stuff with guys that mean so much to you and getting to make this music that obviously you spent a lot of time and care. By the way, the EP is amazing.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I have a lot more to say about that, but it must have also been weird to step into this time of so much excitement, like pulling back a slingshot and then not letting to let it go. You have to just kind of like drop whatever you were going to shoot out into the sky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. Let's see, before I forget, so how is your music I mean, I know you and I briefly had some communication way back in late 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow, that's very... thank you for bringing that up, because I was wondering if I should bring it up, but I was like, oh, there's no way he's going to remember it. But it's going well, man.
Oh, no. I absolutely remember. I was quite impressed what you were doing at the time, and I'm not really familiar with what you've been doing since, but enough for me to want to reach out.
Well, man, thank you so much. Things are going well, man. I still make music. I've got, I also play in this cover band that works a lot called Skyrocket. We do a lot of 70s and 80s stuff, but I'm also still working on my own stuff and doing this podcast and stuff.
You are dropping out. Actually.
I am? Oh.
Yeah. I didn't hear the last two sentences. But your signal is very clear.
Oh.
And then it just goes dead. Well, hopefully it won't be a repeating thing.
Yeah, I hope not. I think I'm in a good place. I thought I was in a good place.
Okay.
Cell phone wise, that is. Anyway, yeah, thank you for asking. I'm still making music and doing all that stuff and playing. This EP, like I said, is incredible. First of all, how I know that since Jellyfish, you did Imperial Drag with Eric, and then you had Uma Jets, which I guess has always been kind of an ongoing thing with you and Tim?
No, Uma Jets was a project that Tim had with a friend of his back home named Rob Aldridge.
Singer-songwriter
guy.
Sorry about that.
And the connection is that both Eric and I performed and, you know, added some, I guess I added a few small songwriting contributions. I don't remember if Eric did, but we both played on several of their recordings.
Okay, that's where I must be confused.
Yeah, that was really fun and innocent. And because, you know, I mean, it's always less stressful to just be hired out as an accessory than to have your, as you well aware, to be emotionally invested and have your own art be a part of the project, because then you've got more cards in the game, or whatever the phrase is.
Right.
I certainly can tend to not stay very light about it. Suddenly the whole thing becomes more of a daily obsession and focus, and, you know, there's business aspects to it and all that stuff. So this was fun to just be peripheral on that. But it was also, in a lot of ways, a very, very fond memory that I think the three of us wanted to try to explore again before, you know, I mean, before we were in our 60s. I mean, it's just like, what? I called Tim up in 2017, just, hey, I just want to see if you're interested in writing, and just have some fun doing that. We could do it long distance, whatever. And that basically evolved into Licorice Quartet, because then we reached out to Eric, and Tim came out to L.A., and we started writing, and blah, 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 blah. And I had a lot of good luck with, you know, post-Jellyfish world, post-Imperial Drag TVI fans being very loyal to me and being excited to hear new music whenever I put it out in the brief periods that I did.
Definitely.
The solo stuff. So I knew there was an audience out there waiting for us, but we had to get our act together first. And 2.5 years later, we finally did. Just because we're all busy, you know.
Yeah.
Making a living doing whatever we're doing musically. And Tim had to always come out to L.A. to work. We did some stuff from home, you know, our independent home studios, but it was still a labor of love and great exercise and patience.
Yeah, definitely. Well, definitely, because there's so much that has gone into this music. Did you guys produce it yourselves? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the goal was to do everything ourselves, for better or worse. None of us claim to be engineers, so none of us are, and we've hired two really great guys to help out who couldn't have been better about, you know, the bonus discount rates for their rooms and talents, and just got so lucky along the way, friends helping us out. But yeah, the three of us just wore as many hats as we could to get to the finish line.
That's good. And did you find, like, now that you're approaching you're approaching this a lot more years on, with a lot more experience and a lot more maturity, probably both emotionally and musically, where did it feel, was it one of those things where it felt better than it ever did before, kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, just speaking for myself, it's not too different than when someone doesn't really hang out with their family all year and they go back for the holidays.
Right.
Well, it doesn't matter what age you are, suddenly you're back in the same dynamic you and your family were in when you were a 7-year-old boy, and you might have older brothers or sisters, and then your parents. Everybody assumes the same roles,
right?
Even though everybody's in their 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah.
Right? So that requires great self-awareness to continue to keep egos in check, to notice when one's being triggered emotionally or all the same things that any group of musicians, any band dynamic is susceptible to. And but I'm very thankful and confident that we are a lot more wise. But I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, I still, again, speaking for myself, I've had a lot of opportunities over the years to be in the studio with great producers and be a sideman on sessions and so forth. But being in an environment making your own records, I mean, I'm never going to learn everything I need to learn and want to learn before I pass. I mean, it's just impossible because I haven't clocked enough hours in a room with, you know, tape machines and mixing consoles and outboard gear and just even the process. Yeah. So it's almost like, okay, you know, Belly Button was really my first big opportunity to do that, or real time opportunity to do that.
Right.
Followed up by Spilt Milk. Well, I then didn't have the ability to make one or two records like that of my own music for the next 30 years. That simply didn't happen. Obviously, I've worked on my own music, but a lot of it's been in front of the computer. A lot of it has been, you know, I'm going to take advantage of technology to do my one man band because I'm not John Bryan. I can't play every instrument well.
Right, right.
I can fake a lot of instruments, and I know what the instruments are supposed to do. And I know a great bass line, and I know a sucky bass line. But I physically can't. I don't have the technique to play it like I do on keyboards or what have you. I learned volumes making these 12 songs, the other eight, which the public will hear down the road. And it was no different than anything I've ever worked on. Some of it came really fast and very easy, and other parts of the record, arrangements and fleshing out production, posed huge problems, huge challenges, and I was losing my mind, and I'm never going to get it. We're never going to figure, we haven't cracked the code. This is sucking. How are we going to, you know? And so you finally figure it out, and you, it's all those moments of resistance.
Right.
And that you transcend, and that's how anybody gets good at any skill, be it in sports or what have you. So that was my greatest joy in making these things. It was just like, well, I know the song kicks ass, but we've got to make it convey that in the studio. And
right.
It was, you know, a giant list of what that's going to take. I mean, you've heard Lighthouse Spaceship, and that song went through so many moments alone of just, okay, that section's working, these two sections aren't. What the hell are we going to do about it?
Right, yeah.
And just trying and shit.
How, I mean, just like as a, like, I'm glad that you brought that song up because, like, how did you talk me through that song, like, through its inception? Like, is that, that's you singing in the verses, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did you come up, did you write that song alone or did you guys write that song together?
Well, so a little of both. So the way all this stuff happened was everybody had scraps of unfinished ideas that they liked enough to share with the other people. If the other people seemed inspired or, hey, I really get that, or I like what's going on there, that's when you get inspired. And as you know, it's pretty easy to then, well, not easy, but you have the appetite and desire to try to finish it. Right. Let me take that home, sleep on it. So that happened with every song. So yeah, that particular song, I had like a verse, I had a verse and the kind of bridge idea. The choruses we wrote together, the outro we wrote together. Eric wrote the lyric. He's just faster than me and Tim at these things, and he seems to be able to, you know, all the song ideas, certainly the ones that I bring to the table, they always have some kind of gibberish I'm singing in the chorus. Now I wasn't singing, like Bluebird, for example,
okay.
if you have heard any
of
that,
yeah.
So, right, I was mumbling something about Bluebird in the chorus. So the song kind of launched from that, but Lighthouse was a blank slate. And so Eric really rose to the occasion to make some kind of, you know, meaningful, but slightly psych proggy, fun lyric, which
sure.
is what he's good at. We loved that, and then we just all kept arranging stuff together. There were parts like the guitar intro, no. That was something I was singing. That was a melody I heard from the beginning, but I didn't know, is that guitar, is that synth, how's that going to be executed?
Right.
And we just all put our heads together and start going for it. Jeremy Stacy played drums. So again, you know, we had drum grooves and arrangements, and I certainly do play drums, but not as well as all the people I work with.
Right.
And so that comes in, and everybody starts kind of, and then you're just constantly, as you know, you're just constantly voting on it. Is this working? What do you think? Right. No, I think this sounds too Beatly and retro. Well, then get rid of it. It needs to be heavier. You know, it needs to have more of a Soundgarden heaviness or whatever. So you just keep bouncing around like that. And I love that process. It never gets old for me. And, you know, 8, 10, 12-hour days will just fly by. And you pray like, okay, I hope when I come in tomorrow, all that blood, sweat, and tears we just did on the chorus, I hope some of it sounds halfway decent.
Yeah.
And if not, you start over from the drawing board again.
Yeah, definitely. It just seems like when I was listening, that was the first song that I heard from it, and along with everyone else before I got the rest of the EP. But I was just like, that's one of those songs that you listen to where you're like, how did they do this? Like, how did they lay this whole thing out? Did you guys do any recording like the four of you guys playing live together in the room, like laying down a basic track? Was there any of that going on?
No, because the parts were going to be too detailed. So for,
right,
say, you know, bass, for example, to improv all these mapped out lines and licks, it's just, I mean, most bass players can't do that, no matter how good they are. So it's not, and not to single out Tim or anything, I'm just saying, you know, he's primarily the bassist in the group, but so jamming is not an extension of what this group does.
Right.
I've certainly been in situations where great stuff is resulted from jamming, but I also prefer to, if I can see the architecture in my mind, which can be nothing more than, you know, I mean, you know, as a fellow songwriter, you have a, if you don't have a lyric, but you've got a melody you believe in and a chord progression and a feel, you can sing something into your phone and listen to it in the days ahead. And you know right away if it's solid. You're like, okay, that, I can't get that hook out of my head. Now it's just a matter of connecting the dots. Now it's just a matter of showing it to my band, having me and a producer flush it out, whatever it is, whatever the process is. So we definitely had, we had Lighthouse, we had everything. No, we had the outro too. We spent a lot of time songwriting, but the ability to just sit down in a room, everybody grabbed their acoustic. I had my piano sound on the keyboard, and we just would play through it and mumble the melody.
Right.
And then when we all were like, this is solid, you know, we'll probably extend the outro and have it fade, but all the sections seem to have a good length. I don't think we hang on any of them too long or too short.
No.
The intro, and so we map out an arrangement, because again, that's my architecture. When that is laid out, now it's just a matter of filling in the dots. Like I said, filling in the blanks. Filling in the blanks might take a week. It might take 3 months, but we're going to fill it in. That,
right.
That I know, and I'm not in doubt of any of it, because that raw architecture is kicking my ass, and my hope is that everyone else will enjoy it as well. So that's kind of what works for me. I can't speak, you know, to other creators, but that was the procedure for every song you're going to hear.
Right. And did Eric, on Fadoodle, that song has this Roxy Music vibe. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so that was a tune that I had actually created the genesis with another gentleman. He had hired me to just write songs with him for a record he was going to do, and then that record never materialized. A guy from Toronto. And so I had all those song scraps sitting around that he and I had done way back in 2004 or something. And the core of Fadoodle was one of those ideas. Again, no lyrics, just lots of mumbling into a tape deck. But I was like, man, I love the energy in this idea.
Yeah.
So that was a verse and a chorus and the bridge, and or the first part of the bridge, where Eric is singing.
Right.
And the guys liked it. They too liked the kind of, you know, 70s eighth note Eno Roxy Music.
Yeah, yeah.
Fun about it. Sparks. attitude, and then we just set out to do put our stamp on it. And again, that was another, well, I have no idea what this should be about. No lyrics, just mumbling, and Eric ran with that. So, you know, I mean, this is why Eric and I worked in Imperial Drag. There were things that didn't work for Eric and I in Imperial Drag, which is why we eventually went our separate ways, but we had a pretty good run of songwriting, a lot of which the world hasn't heard because we didn't release it. We just had the one album.
Right.
But, you know, a good collaboration, a good duo, a good trio, everybody kind of makes up for their strengths and weaknesses. I mean, a goal of ours was, you know, my greatest hope was that we could come out with being, representing ourselves, coming across the way like, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash did. It's like,
right.
At their core, they just have undeniably strong songs. And then you've got the fact that everybody's a singer-songwriter in their own right, but nobody's really the lead singer in that group. The sound of the group is the three of them. It's not just one guy. And they all share a lot of the duties. On one song, Stephen Stills might have more of a vision, but on another song, Graham Nash might have more of a vision. Fleetwood Mac's the same. So we were just going for that.
Well, it's beautiful. And your vocal harmony is, I saw you guys live as Jellyfish, or when you guys were in Jellyfish, on the Spilt Milk tour, and I still remember, you know, those harmonies, and to hear that blend is a very, very exciting thing as a fan, you know.
Thank you, man. Nothing better than getting a compliment from a fellow musician.
Oh, totally.
Music maker.
There was one other thing I wanted to point out that it's. I'm glad that you told me that that Eric wrote the lyrics to Lighthouse. Or most of the lyrics to Lighthouse, because I was going to ask, because there's a couple of like Yoda lines in the songs. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't, but I
in light.
That doesn't surprise me.
I guess it's because the lyric videos.
Oh, just the way.
Yeah, the phrasing, like
the way he's. Yeah.
If distressed, you're feeling is the Lighthouse one, and then the what wearing are you is the one in Fadoodle.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just stood out to me.
I think Eric just. That's how his brain works. You know, he's one of the most unique musicians I've ever worked with because he doesn't follow any of the rules. He doesn't follow. And again, this is just who he is. He's not, particularly studied or trained. So that's one reason. I'm a lot more studied and trained than most of the people I work with. And I'm not saying that's better or worse. That's just happens to be how I was raised.
Sure.
Some of my biggest heroes are, you know, complete musical imbeciles, but they have absolutely changed the world.
Right.
And I love them for it, and they've taught me a lot. And Eric, I don't know how he was influenced or what inspired him or what he practiced or what he didn't practice, but I love throwing ideas at him and say, you know, here, take this home. Let's see what happens, because he'll try a bunch of shit, and, you know, 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10 ideas are just like, how did you come up with that? What were you even thinking? Because that's not anywhere near what I was thinking the guitar was going to do on this part or whatever.
Right.
How did you get that sound? What tuning is that? And why did you decide to tune it that way when you can actually just play it this way?
I mean, right.
It defines all logic, and that of course is therein lies the beauty.
Yeah.
That can be sometimes frustrating because it can take longer. It can pose other challenges, but at the end of the day, it's like, why would I want Joe Average, conventional, generic, like Beatle guy on this?
Right.
You know, we already have plenty of that in the world.
Yeah.
Plenty of brilliant people doing that. That's the whole thing. And Eric always provides that twist. And as you can see, he does that in his lyrics as well. So he's such an important part of the trio and what the three personalities bring to everything.
Yeah. All of you guys, it seems... It seems very balanced. Like the Crosby, Stills, and Nash reference makes a lot of sense to me. And it kind of sounds like what is going on in there in the music. Was there any apprehension because of sort of the rabid love that Jellyfish fans have? Was there ever any apprehension to where like maybe you guys didn't get together before because it's like, man, you know what I mean? Like some sort of unseen pressure.
You mean would this work and would we be wasting our time?
Yeah, I mean, and I mean this just because when I saw that you guys were coming together as a band, I was very excited as a fan. But also as a fan, you're like, well, this better be good. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
right.
It is. Sure. But were you guys cognizant of any of that, and did that ever discourage you in any way? Or did it give you a fire?
I totally get what you're saying. No, it didn't discourage me, and I'll tell you why. I learned very early on with Jellyfish. I mean, Andy and I definitely shared this philosophy, which was the only way we're going to be able to sleep at night is if we give something to the world that we believe in 100%. Meaning, if it's not blowing our minds thoroughly, then we almost have no right to play it for anybody else. If we don't think it's the greatest possible contribution that we could make, given at this time in our lives, and in that case it was in our early 20s, or now I'm in my early 50s, we'd better have thick skin, because as soon as somebody doubts it, whether it's the press or a girlfriend or a record company person or an interviewer, then if we have any doubt, that's what's going to cripple us, and that's what's going to feel bad. That criticism is going to hurt. So, we understood that bearing your soul and throwing your art out there to the sharks, so to speak, that's always going to be a scary proposition. Obviously, it feels just as amazing when somebody says, yes, we approve. So I learned that very early on. So in the case of Licorice Quartet, I was like, this shit doesn't leave the door and no other ears hear it until all three of us are like, yep, done. Mission accomplished. And that's of course, why certain songs don't make the cut, or certain ideas that were possibly sensational or spectacular or had some merit, you know, ultimately they may not serve the song. I'm always aware of what is going to serve the song. So you mentioned Fadoodle, for example. You know, it kind of had this 70s Roxy driving eights kind of glitter pop attitude to it. Well, I wanted to make sure we did that as good as we could,
yeah,
but also that we weren't doing some kind of retro thing. I wanted it to be, well, what is our version of that in 2020? What's our twist? What do we want to say? In addition to the fact that, yeah, we love Roxy Music, for example, and Sparks, and they're great bands, and sure, they influenced us. Well, it can't just be that.
Right.
We're not, it's a nostalgic project. It's never been my intention. My intention has always been, which is what I love, is operating with the classics in mind, because I think the classics are just that, because they are such high quality songwriting, they're earworms that you can't get out of your head no matter how old you are or no matter what year you hear them. Right? So there's teenage people, kids now, who are discovering and hearing the Beatles for the first time.
Right.
Now, if a lot of them can put their hip hop influence on the shelf for a second and entertain some seriously sentimental, emotionally conveyed melody, if they can get in touch with their feminine side, both, I'm saying that for both men and women who seem to only want to be hard and tough and masculine,
right,
in 2020, as opposed to balanced. If they can get, you know, why do all of us guys like the Beatles? Well, because we get in touch with our feminine side for 2 seconds and enjoy songs like She's Leaving Home.
Yeah.
You know, we give ourselves permission to do that. We give ourselves permission to be vulnerable for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And there's great joy in that, because none of us are just one thing. We're a balance of that yin and yang, masculine and feminine. Every human is. So I went off on a tangent, but my whole point is that I needed to make sure if we were all in agreement, then it's like, okay, now we can throw it to the sharks. And I don't care if the sharks say, you guys suck. You are not now and never will be anything remotely close to the heights of ecstasy that was Jellyfish. Okay, that's your opinion. You can say that. That's not how I feel about the music. Otherwise, I wouldn't have released it.
Right.
So again, whether it was Imperial Drag or TVIs or my solo stuff, or I've always believed in it and say, hey, whoever I was in Jellyfish, this is what I offered up. These were my contributions to the project, and these are my offerings now, and I stand by them. And it's always been the same. Most people have had a positive reaction, and some people are like, not for me. And that's, as you know, that's the part you have to get used to. And it's like, well, my sense of self and my sense of self-respect and self-love is not dependent on the outside world. That includes my girlfriend, my parents, my brothers and sisters, Johnny Gowdy, any random interviewer, right? I care what people have to say, and I respect their opinion, but I don't make it about me.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's about not taking it personally, and that's a really, really challenging thing for most folks, including myself, because it's not how we're raised.
Right.
Our well-meaning parents and the authority figures in our lives basically show us, if the world doesn't like you, you will not be employed and you won't get laid.
Right.
So you better make sure people like you. They never talk about cultivating a relationship with yourself. Do you like yourself?
Right.
Are you okay with who you are when you look in the mirror? Are you okay with who you are when you pick up a guitar and play? Are you okay with who you are if you enjoy stalker and or you want to skateboard or whatever it is? And that's the real, that's why anything like the arts that we throw ourselves into, and you know this better than anyone, it ultimately is a journey about your relationship with you, right? When you come up with a song idea that is blowing your mind, hey man, is there a drug out there that can do that?
There's
That's
none.
An insane feeling.
Yeah.
There's none. And chances are, it took a while and a lot of perseverance and patience with yourself and determination to even churn out your first song idea that you went, oh fuck, where did that come from? That's I love that.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 months later, you're listening to it again. You're like, I forgot about that idea. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Right?
Yeah.
That's just a journey you take with yourself. You're not really sharing that with anybody else.
No.
You may have a few band members that dig it, but again, that's a private journey. And that's a really tough thing to explain to non-musicians, to non-songwriters, because frankly, that's why I started doing this. That's why I'm still doing it. Because there's nothing funner than kind of blowing my mind, my own mind.
Yeah.
And then if the outside world shares in that joy, well, that's the frosting on the cake.
Yeah.
That's just the heights of ecstasy.
Yeah.
Some fucking stranger in Spain hears your music and goes, well, and they say, oh, I hear all these influences. You clearly are a fan of this, and I love the way your vocal does this, that, and the other. It's like, I don't even know you, and I'm never going to see you or share a meal with you before I leave this planet. And you have just given me one of the biggest compliments ever from a total stranger.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, it's magical. It's funny that you do say that is the most difficult thing to explain to non-creative people, the feeling that you get when you finish it and you hear it for the first time by yourself, even, you know.
No. Well, and it really transcends this physical plane. Yeah, because it's completely invisible.
Yeah.
Other than when you see the speakers flapping, music is, it's just flying through the airwaves, your eyes can't see it. Cells in your body, they're feeling it. You know, you have the ability to respond to frequency, but and often, you know, you can sit there and go, you know, my best ideas that I have always been most amazed by were like, where did that come from, or what's the genesis of it? Now you can say, well, it's because I listened to X amount of Beach Boys, X amount of Carpenters, X amount of Cheap Trick, and X amount of Sex Pistols.
Right.
And that's absolutely true, but I think a good songwriter is self-aware enough to know when they're actually, you know what, I'm stealing that. that's yeah. way too close to home. I've just kind of moved this here, and now I'm ripping something off.
Right.
But a songwriter also knows when it's like, well, sure, I can hear some Burt Bacharach in this, but this is a completely original thought.
Right.
Or, and if it's not original thought, please, somebody play me the artist who I stole this from, subconsciously or whatever. But, yeah, it's really this kind of connection. Well, to me, it's always been the most direct connection to art, the spiritual side of, you know, our essence. What is that thing that's driving this physical meat suit that we're attached to?
Yeah.
Plays the instrument and sings, but it's not what's really actually creating the music, and that is some kind of thing that none of us can articulate, because it's our spiritual essence and how we're all connected to each other, and, you know, some kind of ultimate universal force of love that we're all an extension of, and I don't have a face for it, I don't have a name for it, I just know that it's 100% real.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because that as you... going through the music that I've heard you make of yours and in collaboration and stuff like that, there is an inherent joy that kind of like shines very brightly, like at the end of this Lighthouse Spaceship song. You know what I mean? Where it almost like slides into like this Godspell vibe with like, you know, joyous choir singing in the back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Godspell is spelled very appropriate reference.
Thank you. I really like you. You have been a huge inspiration, a huge influence on me as a musician, and whatever song it is that comes out of you agrees with what I like to listen to. You know what I mean? And I think you guys, you're making incredible music. This Threesome Volume 1 EP is just really great. And also, I do have to also say, you guys, these are like four of the best bridges I've heard in music in years. Like, you guys are like the kings of bridges.
We love doing that.
Yeah.
When it's the kind of final piece of the jigsaw puzzle, if you like the jigsaw puzzle you've been building so far.
Yeah, yeah.
So, thank you for noticing.
Yeah, no problem, man. I love it. Well, man, I'll talk more about where people can find the record and stuff, but this is really, it's been great talking to you, getting to catch up. And I'm so glad you guys.
Surprise.
Yeah, yeah. I was hoping you'd remember. I didn't think you would, but I'm really flattered that you did. So so it's great to talk to you again, Roger.
Well, I'm trying to remember where I put my cassettes and CDs that we had exchanged.
Yeah, man. I'll be more happy.
I know they're in a box somewhere. I moved 2 years ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, I'll send you some new cassettes, man.
Please.
Thank you.
Send me some files.
Sure, I will. Thank you so much for doing this, and good luck with everything. And I hope that at some point you guys get to get out and play, and I get to come out and see you, and maybe we'll meet in real life instead of just on the phone.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for helping spread the word with, you know,
I'm more than happy to. Anything I can do. This is really amazing music, and I really believe in it and whatever it is you guys do.
All right. Right on, dude. Right. Well, you take care. You and your family, be safe, and see you on the other side.
All right, Roger. Take care, man.
Thanks, Johnny. Bye. Bye.
All right, Roger Joseph Manning Jr. from the Licorice Quartet, their brand new EP, their debut EP, I should say, Threesome Volume 1, drops May 15th. Get out there and check it out. That song that you're hearing, Lighthouse Spaceship, is the first single from the record, and it's available now, wherever it is that you stream and download your jams. What a great conversation with Roger. I wish that could have gone on. Honestly, I could have done that for like 3 hours. But what a great, great conversation. What a very gracious dude. I hope that he stayed safe. Once again, the band has members of Jellyfish, sort of the band that was out there during the Spilt Milk tour. It has Roger Joseph Manning Jr., obviously, Eric Dover on guitar, and Tim Smith. Only now they're all writing and singing the songs. Great EP, man. I hope that you enjoy it, man. There's great songs on there. Great sounds, great singing, great harmonies, great everything you like. Great songwriting, great playing. Their drummer, the guy that played drums, Jeremy Stacy, he did a great job on that. Anyway, find them at thelicoricequartet.com. It was great, great talking to Roger Joseph Manning Jr. Hey, gang, if you're just coming to the show for the very first time, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast. Wherever it is that you find podcasts, you'll get new shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Sometimes I drop three a week. I was doing that during the quarantine, during the heavy quarantine time. Maybe I'm still doing it. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Okay? Do that. And here's the rest of Lighthouse Spaceship from the great band, The Licorice Quartet. Their EP, Threesome Volume 1, drops May 15th. Want to thank Roger Joseph Manning for taking the time to talk to me. Enjoy it. Let's get down. If distress you feel